Welcome to episode one of the Simply Recording podcast. In this episode, I'll be talking about getting it right at the source, and Graham will share with us a quick tip to help clear up the low end in your recordings. All right, welcome to episode one of the Simply Recording podcast. I'm Joe Gilder of HomeStudioCorner.com.
And I'm Graham Cochran from TheRecordingRevolution.com.
And this is episode one. This is the first time, so bear with us as we get our groove on with the whole podcasting thing. If you're familiar with me from HomeStudioCorner.com, I had a podcast that I did semi-regularly last year, and it kind of trailed off, and I wanted to do something a little more fun and bring somebody else in to make it more entertaining. So I asked Graham, I've been a fan of his website for a long time, if he would join me and do this little joint venture, and he was so kind to oblige. So this is us. This is the Simply Recording podcast.
Yep, and our goal here is to be real intentional, real conversational about how to demystify and simplify the recording process so you get back to the goal, which is making great music and not being confused, not getting hung up on the not important details.
And don't get us wrong, recording is certainly on some levels a complex process. But I think the problem with most people who are new to recording, especially just getting into it, they get overwhelmed and tend to overcomplicate things unnecessarily. So that's a big goal of what we're trying to do here, is just to share with you simple techniques, simple things that you can do to get better recordings without having a whole class in the theory behind digital audio and all that extra stuff that really doesn't matter when it comes down to it.
Totally.
So without further ado, we'll tell you more about ourselves in future episodes, and you can check out our websites to find out more about us. But I think it's time to get into our main segment. Getting it right at the source. Today we're going to share with you seven different ways to ensure that you're getting it right at the source, that your recordings are starting off sounding good long before you ever decide to try to mix them. We thought this was more than appropriate for the first episode of this podcast, because everything we're going to talk to you about in the future, hopefully hundreds of episodes, all comes back to this one very simple concept of getting it right at the source. Graham, what do you think about all that?
What I think is we jump too far into the future when it comes to recording. And you and I were just talking about this, Joe. When I pull up my DAW and I'm ready to record, I'm ready to like get multiple takes and start chopping things up and throwing plugins around, because that's exciting and flashy. And I succumb to that all the time. But what Joe is saying is recording at its most basic is actually capturing an audio source well in a given space. And this doesn't take any extra money. It just takes more intentionality of where are we placing the mic and all these different things we're going to talk about today. If you can get this concept down and create a habit of taking your time in this phase, your recordings will come out stellar in the end compared to if you just jump past it and think about how I'm going to mix it. This is so crucial, but it's basic.
Absolutely. And so let's jump in, and we're going to share with you seven different ways that you can approach your recordings to make sure that you do get it right at the source. The first is, it all begins with the song. Now, if you are a member of the NSAI, Nashville Songwriters Association International, it's a cool group of songwriters, and obviously based out of Nashville, but they're all over the place. And they've got these bumper stickers out that say, it all begins with the song. That's kind of their mantra there. That's what they talk about all the time. And while they're talking about songwriting, it's just as true for the recording process. Who was it? Was it George Massenberg who once said, people don't leave a concert humming the console, they're humming the song?
Yeah.
It's the same idea. You could have the most technically perfect recording, mixed perfectly, and have done everything exactly right like you should have done, and people still won't listen to it if it's not a good song. They're not going to go back to it time and time again, like those records that you listen to, that you've listened to hundreds of times. It's not just because of the good engineering. It's because they were good songs to begin with and a good performance. So that's huge, and something it's easy to overlook. If you're a songwriter yourself and you're recording yourself, you may finish a song and 10 minutes later you're trying to track it. And that may not be the best time to record that song. It probably needs to go through a few more revisions. You need to live with it a little bit before you start recording. And if you're working with clients, it's the same thing. Make sure that those songs have been developed and are at a level that is worth recording before you ever hit the record button.
I think that's a great point, Joe. I think if you are writing your own music and recording your own music, you need to wear a couple of different hats. And if you're starting to think engineer hat too soon, think producer hat, which is, okay, if I'm being honest with myself and I'm about to spend time and maybe money recording and producing music, are these my best songs? And if I've written 10, really are only five of them good, then it might be better to just shelf five of them and just work on the top five and really make a great sounding EP as opposed to an album. And so only you can really be that hard on yourself. You can definitely invite other people into the mix and get their opinion and their feedback on your demos from a song point, but think it through and don't hold too tight to every song you write. Not every song can be great. And so only record and really release and baby and doctor the ones that are the best songs you've written.
And you mentioned demos. That's certainly not saying you should never record the demo of the song at least. That's,
sure.
That's always a good idea. But when you're doing that, the key there isn't to make it sound great. You're really just wanting to get it down so you can live with it for a while and maybe have other people listen to it and give you feedback.
Exactly.
Now, this first one it's not a really exciting point. And a lot of you may just gloss over that and get to the next one, you know, get me to the good stuff. But this really is, it really is important. Otherwise, who cares if it sounds good, if it's just a mediocre song. All right, number two, we talk about the source itself. A lot of people, like you mentioned, Graham, they'll get in there, throw up a mic, record a bunch of takes, and they may not sound that great, but who cares? We're going to fix it in the mix. I hear that all the time. Oh, that's fine. We'll just fix it in the mix. And yes, you can do certain things in a mix, and you can do sometimes a lot of incredible things with less than perfect tracks, but that's not a good habit to get into because you end up wasting a lot of time because if no matter what you can do in the mix, sometimes you can only get it so good and you can't get it to that quality that you want. Whereas if you just took a little more time at the source, mixing would be a lot easier.
Absolutely. And here's something to consider. If you're a relatively new recording engineer or you've gotten into this in the last 5, 10, even 15 years, I would say it's kind of this new era, like myself included, then you might be thinking, yeah, I can fix it in the mix because I've read Sound on Sound or I've read this magazine or seen this video on even Graham and Joe's blog where they're showing this mixing tip and how great it really made that track sound. But what we tend to forget is that those mixing tips apply to tracks that were really well recorded and someone really spent time recording and choosing the mic and placing it in the best place. So those mixing tips really only become excellent if they're worked on great original raw tracks. And so, yes, there's a lot of things you can do with the mixing, but the guys that have great mixes happening, they had other people or themselves spending a lot more time than we usually do on the recording phase because they know that's where it all starts.
Absolutely. And the other half of that is obviously take time to make the source sound good, but also make sure that the source itself sounds good. If you've got a singer-songwriter coming in and their guitar just sounds awful, there are a few scenarios where a really bad guitar might work if it's an old blues tune or something. But maybe it's worthwhile to take a little more time to either get your own guitar or borrow a guitar from a friend, all those types of things. If it's a rock tune and it really needs a Tele sound, but all you've got is a Les Paul, you can try your best to make it sound like a Tele. It's just not going to happen. So the ideal scenario is go find a Telecaster and record that.
Absolutely. I think, Joe, you bring up a really good point before we move on to that is how much you treat this recording process is really important. Kind of will determine what you'll do for the recording. And like you said, Joe, like if you really value what the track is going to turn out to be in the end, you'll go to great lengths to make it sound as best as it can, even on a limited budget. I mean, I've been in recording sessions with bands that have no budget and we have a drum set up and the cymbals just aren't sounding great and we're putting the mic in the right place. And then somebody says, you know, I've got a buddy who has this killer crash cymbal and he lives 20 minutes away, but I think I can go borrow it. Well, let's put the recording on hold for 40 plus minutes so you can go get that cymbal. He brings it back, we throw it up, and all of a sudden the harsh cymbal sound goes away and everything sounds crisp. That was an inconvenience at the time, but once we got down to tracking it and mixing it, and months and years later, as they're listening to the track, the cymbals sound great always and forever, and it was worth taking some inconvenient time to go get something else to swap it out, even if it's borrowing it from a buddy.
Yeah, it's totally worth it. All right, let's move on to number three, mic choice. Now, this may not be an option for you. If you only have one microphone, then it's really easy. You use that mic. But for some of us, you know, I don't have a huge mic selection. I've got maybe five or six mics I have to choose from. But I don't always grab one mic and throw it on the source, because every source is different and every mic has a different sound. And it would be a great idea to spend time getting to know your microphones, what they sound like, what they do well on, what they do poorly on, and that can help you with your choice. Graham, how do you go about picking a mic when you're recording something?
Well, like you said at the beginning, Joe, if you have one mic, you use that mic, and it's not even a joke. But if you have a couple of mics, what you can do is think of some basic things like, okay, do I want a dynamic or a condenser mic? Those are two big classifications of mic types, not even brands, right? So there's a lot of times when a condenser mic is a really good choice for the studio because it really is sensitive and will capture a lot of nuances, like maybe a vocal or an acoustic guitar. But maybe the situation calls for a mic that can take more of a loud sound being blasted at it, like maybe a snare drum, and it can just sort of just not pick up everything around it. Sometimes dynamic mics can really zero in on the source in front of it when you don't want a lot of bleed, and that might be great for a snare drum or a kick drum. So I usually think, do I want dynamic or condenser if I have a choice? Because this can be even a $100 condenser and a $100 dynamic. And that might be your only choice you have. And then if it comes down to which type of those, the best thing you can do is an experiment. And some of the best mics in the world don't sound great on certain people's voices, let's say if it's a vocal. And even though everyone might use this $1, $2,000 mic, someone's voice might come in and it just doesn't match the way their vocal quality is and the microphone's characteristics. So you might pick a totally different mic and it's just an experiment. And you listen back and you go, you know what, that mic complements his or her voice. A good example would be if you have a female singer and she has a very bright, you know, present voice. If you're using a large diaphragm condenser mic that maybe has a present EQ boost built into it, like a lot of mics do these days in the home studio market, to make your voice stick out in the mix, that might actually be too much presence for her voice, because it's already kind of hitting that frequency. And so you think, why does it sound so harsh? You might need a mic that's just a little more mellow, a lot less present, but with her voice, it will sound perfectly present. So you just experiment sometimes, and even if it's 5 minutes of, let me try this mic, or let's record a little bit with this mic, which sounds better on your voice or the guitar, that might be the way to go.
And it's a great point, because on my album that I released back in the fall, it's only maybe 10 songs, and they're fairly similar, but I used three different vocal mics throughout that record. Different songs on different days, my voice just sounded different, or just that one mic just didn't work. So I had two different condenser mics, a tube mic, a regular condenser, and a dynamic, and they all got used. And as it turns out, the record sounds fairly consistent, the vocal tone, just on different tunes and different days, different mics worked better. So
that's cool.
Even if you find a good mic for a particular singer, it may need to change depending on the song as well. So just something to keep in mind, the mic choice, you're not married to that. And it's always, just like everything else, you should always A, B, and test things out and make sure you've got the best choice. So in kind of the same vein as microphones, the fourth tip is microphone placement. There's all sorts of tips, and probably the most common questions we get are, how do I mic X instrument? How do I mic this particular instrument? And obviously, we could go through and list all the instruments we've ever mic'd and how to do it. But that's not really that productive, because that's only what worked for us. So when dealing with microphone placement, it's you really, Graham had an article recently that talked about pretending the microphone is a flashlight and it only sees what you point it at. And the only way to know how the instrument sounds is to get in front of the instrument with your head and your ears, find a good spot, then point the microphone there and then see if that works.
Yeah, I think, Joe, there is more experimentation with microphone placement in the professional recording world than most home studios and people would believe. I think, you know, we see a couple of ways something is mic'd in a magazine or on a video, and we go, man, that's how you get a great sound. And I know that's how I started. I just would mimic whatever I saw. And that's a great way to start. But then if you dig a little deeper, you notice that all of these Grammy-winning mixing engineers and recording engineers, they're trying crazy weird stuff, and you would think, well, if you've already had success making great sounding records, doing what you've done, why are you trying something else when it already worked? And I think that just shows me, it reminds me, there isn't one way to do anything. There's guys, just read an article about the guy that did the latest Muse and even Foo Fighters record, not the latest one, but the Echo Silence one. You know, he would put the drums in a traditional recording booth and then put a microphone outside of the booth and just record the drums that way. I mean, they're just trying crazy weird stuff because that's the art of recording. And I think we need to have that mentality as if we had, you know, all the time in the world and all the money in the world, and it didn't matter what we did. What could we experiment with? At the end of the day, if you get a cool sound and it fits your vibe, no one cares or even knows how you got it. So, you know, don't be stuck on, I have to mic it a certain way. Think about what sounds cool to me, and, you know, your ear will improve and you'll know what sounds better, but it's all about what sounds cool at the end of the day.
And if you're spending more time in the recording phase trying things out, that's not time wasted. And we all tend to think the real time to play around is once it's recorded and I can use all these plugins that I've got. And yes, there's a place for that, and there's things you can experiment with there. But don't forget to do that at the recording phase. Obviously, don't waste time necessarily, but you know, at some point you need to commit to something and just move forward. But I think a lot of us rush too fast through it. And there are some really interesting things you can do with mic placement. Turn the mic around, face the other way. I mean, there's just all sorts of things that it may sound absurd, but maybe in a particular instance it sounds good.
Definitely. And here's a thought too. If you're working with a client, you know, if you're recording people for money or anything, even if it's a little amount of money, you got to start somewhere. Or if you're recording your band, you know, and you're the recording person in your band, tell them up front, hey, I'm going to spend a little bit of time here, just a few minutes experimenting. I have some ideas of where I'd like the mics to go, but I don't know what's going to sound best today on this kit or on this vocal or whatever. Let them know up front. So then they go, okay, and they're not going to be impatient with you. And then give yourself the freedom, even if it's just for yourself, block off some time and give yourself the permission to experiment. And at the end of the day, like Joe said, commit to what sounds best. Because at some point you're still limited by, you know, your mic and your instrument and everything, but limitations are a good thing. You want to find the best option with your limitations, but give yourself some flexibility and freedom to experiment.
Absolutely. And one quick point we talked about that we wanted to cover, if you're not familiar with a term called proximity effect, it's something to keep in mind, especially with new, when you're new to recording, you want to take your microphone and put it right up on the guitar or right up on whatever instrument you're recording. And while that looks cool, and that's what you see in the pictures in the magazines of the, you know, the big Neumann microphone with the vocalist right up next to it, with a cardioid mic, a directional mic, it tends to have a lot of bass buildup the closer you get to the microphone. And a lot of times if you have too much bass there, it's really hard to deal with that later on in the mix, which gets back to the same point of making it sound good at the source. So don't try to get the mic as close as possible. Back it off a little bit. You may pick up a little more room, but all in all, the sound's probably going to be better. So just something to keep in mind next time you're micing up something. All right. So in kind of that same vein as microphone placement, we need to talk about acoustic treatment. Now, you go into a forum and ask any question about recording whatsoever, and the answer is going to be acoustic treatment. And it's kind of annoying because nobody actually answers your questions. They just say, oh, you need to treat your room. That's the answer to everything. And yes, acoustic treatment is really important. And obviously, if you've got the money and you can buy some treatment or build it yourself, that's great. But we're talking about simply recording. And at the bare minimum, you should at least be cognizant of where in the room you're going to record, how that room sounds. And if you've got a couple of old blankets, you know, anything, mattresses and things like that, do whatever it takes to get that room to sound fairly good so you can get a nice, dry, clean signal.
Absolutely. And like Joe said, you know, look around at where you're at. And some basic things you can do are decide where your primary like vocal recording is going to be. That's going to be a big part of your project if you have vocals and you want them to sound as pro as you can. And so think about, okay, do I need to put a blanket behind me? You know, so sounds that are bouncing off of a wall don't turn around and bounce into my microphone while I'm singing. Or maybe you hang a blanket or in front of the microphone for the opposite reason. These are free things you can do. You can be in a room maybe that has more bookshelves, more furniture, things that just soak up sound. Again, you don't have to overthink this, but if you start to think like, okay, look at the walls and think, if that's a bare wall I'm looking at, that means sound is going to bounce right off of that and go somewhere. So even having a little bit of forethought will help you decide where to stand, where to place the mic, and you'll at least be more intentional about where you put the mic. And if you can't do anything about it, it still goes a long way to think ahead while you're placing the microphone around.
And definitely experiment with it, because if you've never heard, what I found and was kind of surprised is if you've never treated your room and you hear what it sounds like once it is treated, you don't realize how much better it could sound once you would even just do a few simple things, like you said, with a few blankets. And we'll probably cover this on the podcast at some point, but over on my website, homestudiocorner.com, if you do a search for Arlex, I did a review of their Ruminator kit, which is they send you some bass traps and some acoustic foam and stuff. And I recorded a vocal in a room before I treated it, then re-recorded it after. And the before didn't sound bad. If you listen to it, you'd say, okay, that sounds okay. But the after sounds so much better because there's not so much room in the recording. A lot of that sound got absorbed. So it's surprising. And a few people commented and said, you know, I didn't think my recording sounded bad, and they maybe don't, but wow, they could be improved with just a little bit of treatment. Mm-hmm. So definitely something to check out. All right. So number six, take time to listen back. And we hinted at this earlier in a couple of the other points, but Graham, why don't you tell us why that's so important? What are we talking about there?
What we're talking about is something that is assumed, but we always forget. If you're choosing where to put the mic and you're experimenting, you need to record a little bit if you don't have a separate room where you can be listening in a controlled environment, like a control room. A lot of times we're just in one room. You're recording in the same room where your control room is. So, you know, mute the speakers, record for a minute, and then let everyone listen back and start to decide, what does it sound like? Let's say it's an acoustic guitar, for example. What does this acoustic guitar sound like after we just recorded it? Is it too bright? Is it too bass heavy? Find, you know, what's wrong with it, and maybe what are the strengths about it, and compare that to what you want it to sound like in your head, and then go, okay, if it's a little too bass heavy, I'm going to adjust it maybe an inch this way, or I'm going to pull it away from the guitar just a smidge. Then you rinse and repeat. You record a little bit more, listen back. This is your opportunity to get it sounding sweet. So once you've listened back, and I'm just talking 30 seconds or something, and you found, man, I like this sound, that gives you total confidence to then now really record the part with acoustic guitar. Because now you don't have to worry about, is it going to sound good? Now you're thinking about performance, and that's a whole other element of recording. So take a few seconds, listen back. I do this with drums a lot. A lot of times if I'm recording drums on location somewhere, we don't have a separate control room. So I'm in the room with the drums. We can't obviously listen without hearing the drums in the real space because they're so loud. So we just put on headphones, crush the drums with the mics the way they are, and then we stop, we all come back, listen to the speakers or the headphones and go, oh, that's the way the drums actually sound on my recording. Do I like them or not?
And one of the things we were talking about before is if you're like us and you're recording in the same room, it's hard to really hear, even if you got headphones on, what it sounds like on the recording. It may sound great because you got the bass player standing right behind you playing through an amp. And you may think, oh, this sounds awesome. But if you don't stop and listen back when nothing else is going on, you're going to miss what some big issues that were there that you just don't hear. So record, like Graham said, record 30 seconds, have everybody stop playing, listen back, and just make sure it sounds good.
Absolutely. It sounds like this should go without saying, but like Joe and I were talking about before we got on the air, is that this is something we even struggle with. We'll jump past this part because we'll get overconfident. Oh yeah, the mic's going to be great. I think it sounds fine. Let's track it. And that's just making everything harder on ourselves. You might as well just be so confident in where you've got the mic. And if it doesn't sound good, that's okay. The pros will set up a mic and it won't sound good. But what makes them a pro is that then they go back and then they change it and they tweak it and they move the mic an inch or two, or they swap out a mic and they try something else until it sounds good.
Yeah. I just had a session yesterday. Bass player came over and we did several songs with an upright. And so I had an idea. I wanted to put a dynamic down by the F hole and a condenser up kind of halfway up the neck to catch the finger noise and stuff like that, and set it up. And it sounded okay through the headphones while he was playing, and we were about to just start tracking, and I remembered, no, you got to listen to it. So we recorded a few seconds, listened back, and we actually decided to put up a third mic across the room just to capture the sound in the room, because it was a more ethereal, going to be a real kind of washed out, reverby kind of tune, and they wanted a little extra room tone. So had I not listened back, we wouldn't have it, and we'd have to figure out some reverb stuff or something to do on that. So every day, every time you record, it's hard. It's easy to want to rush into it, but just take a little time. You'll be glad you did. And the time that you take is going to save you probably exponentially more time during the mixing phase. Like you were saying before, if it's going to take you an extra hour to EQ that guitar to get it to sound right, take an extra 10 minutes when you're recording and get it to sound right.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, remember that this hopefully won't be your last project you ever record. And what I mean by that is you want to always be learning. And if you jump through this process too quickly, throw up a mic or two and start recording, you miss out on an opportunity to educate yourself by experimenting and learning that, hey, that didn't actually sound good that day, or I've always mic'd this a certain way and it always sounds good, but not on that type of instrument or vocal. And so don't ever shortchange yourself from the knowledge you gain for free just by being in a recording session. You almost want to extend that out as long as you can, as long as either the budget or the time allows, so you get as much experience as you can. You'll be a lot better off for it. And then when you make mixing decisions, if you happen to mix that same project, you'll know a lot more about the material that you recorded, and that'll help you in the mixing process.
Oh, yeah. And one quick thing, when you're listening back, depending on your headphones, you may not be able to hear the low end as well as you need to. I've done it before. I'm tracking acoustic, and I listen back on some like $100 headphones that don't have a lot of low end, and I don't hear any problems in the low end, but they were actually there. Mm-hmm. It's a little annoying to have to mute the microphones and turn on your studio monitors and listen through them, but it's worth it because you may hear some things that you don't hear on the headphones. So while you're listening back, take just a second to listen on the monitors as just a last-ditch effort to make sure you're not missing anything. And finally, we hinted at this several times already, but it deserves its own bullet point. The seventh thing is to, when you do get it right at the source, mixing is much easier. And that, I just can't say that enough. When I get tracks in from people that kind of sound crappy, the mix ends up kind of sounding crappy. I mean, I can do lots of things and I can improve things and get it to a certain level, but if the tracks themselves just aren't that great, there's not a lot I can do with it.
It's true, and here's the problem. It's a lot easier to sell plugins. It's a lot easier to sell even mixing tutorials that even, you know, you or I will do, Joe, like things that are really, really flashy and precise, than it is to sell, hey, you need to just take more time and place the mic somewhere, and then if it doesn't sound good, move the mic, and then rinse and repeat. Like, that's not exciting, and that sounds obvious. Everyone knows that. I mean, you should know that, but we don't do it. So the truth of the matter is, like Joe said, if you want a great mix or you want mixing to be easier, what you really need is to go back to the stuff that everyone already says they know, but we're not actually doing, which is taking more time in the recording process, and it will make your mixes better, and it'll then help you to actually mix better. Because here's a problem. The problem is, we'll get guys, like Joe saying, we'll get guys that are trying to mix on their own, and they're frustrated with their mixes. And they may be implementing every mix technique that they've ever learned that's correct. And they may even have good ears and a good listening environment. The problem is if they're not recording very well or they're rushing through the recording process, they're shortchanging their mixing. And then they're having a hard time getting a good mix, because even a pro would have a hard time getting a good mix because the tracks aren't that balanced.
And I would venture to say that probably over half of the questions that I get through people from the website who just email me and ask me questions, almost all the time it's some sort of mixing related question. They're struggling with this particular part of mixing. Mm-hmm. And while that's certainly valid to ask those questions and you need to learn all these different mixing tricks and things like that, a lot of times they don't want to hear, but the truth is, you know, I'm thinking your tracks just, that's just how they sound, and you can do a few things to help a little bit, but your mixing questions are answered in the recording phase.
Exactly.
It's a tough pill to swallow, but it's true. And sometimes the answer is to re-record if you didn't do it right the first time.
That's why we're here. We're here to help.
That's right. Well, that's it for our main segment, talking about getting it right at the source. We talked about it all begins with the song. The source itself needs to sound good. Talked about mic choice and mic placement, acoustic treatment, taking time to listen back, and the fact that this will make your mixing much easier and probably will make your mixes a lot better. So thanks for checking in. We're going to move on to the quick tip.
All right, today's quick tip is to use your bass roll-off switch, either on your microphone or your preamp. Now, what do I mean by this? Not every mic has this, and not every microphone preamp has this, but a lot of mics, even in the affordable range that I recommend, have a little switch on the mic that has like a little line that looks like, you know, a broken over L or a one that got knocked over. It's like bent, and it's just like a little high pass filter curve. If you ever looked at EQ, that's all it is. You flip that switch, and what it's going to do is cut off any frequency information below, usually like 80 hertz or something, that's going into the microphone. How is this helpful to you? This is helpful because if you're miking something, usually in any environment, especially a home studio environment, there's a lot of, you know, air conditioning flow or just outside noise that kind of turns into rumble because low frequency stuff can travel everywhere and spread so quickly and travel through the ground that there's this stuff building up that gets into your mic. And that means it gets into your recording. And you may be recording in a guitar or a vocal and you don't need anything for around 80 hertz. So one thing you can do is just flip that switch on your mic. Or if you don't have it on your mic, a lot of microphone preamps or audio interfaces might have this similar button. And what that's doing is saving you from recording low end that you don't need and you would probably just cut out later in the mix with a high pass filter. It also makes you send a less of a loud signal to your DAW. So it's reducing the actual output volume of what's going into your DAW because it's less information, even if it's not much less. That can really, really help you get a little bit cleaner, a little bit clearer recordings. And usually, again, this is for stuff that isn't like a kick drum or a bass guitar where you do want to feature those frequencies. And another thought about it too is, we mentioned in the main segment, if you use a microphone too close to a source, generally a cardioid mic, you're going to get this low frequency buildup called the proximity effect. If you have to mic something really close because of instrument bleed or because of the noisy environment you're in and you don't have any other choice, a bass roll-off switch on your mic or preamp can actually help reduce some of that low end that just is caused by the proximity effect. It won't fix everything, but it's a real quick and simple way to clear up the mix a bit.
And if your microphone and your preamp both have roll-off switches, just pick one. If you do both, you can start getting some weird phasey issues in the low end, or you just end up rolling off too much low frequency.
Exactly.
So that's the quick tip. All right, well, that's it for episode number one of the Simply Recording podcast. Again, I'm Joe Gilder, and you can find me over at homestudiocorner.com.
And I'm Graham Cochran, and you can hang out with me over at therecordingrevolution.com.
And we're both on Twitter, Facebook, all that fun stuff. Come hang out with us, friend us, all that fun stuff. And thanks for listening. We will see you on the next episode.